Going to start the English medium discussion, and we will have little more than 1 hour. We have a appointed topic for the main thing of the discussion, but before going to that traditional one, I would like to ask if there are any other new comments or new topics or something, then we can proceed and then take a few minutes for that and then go to the main discussion. So if there are any, please.
Sarai Bante?
Yes.
We have not received any reports from this end, Bante.
So that means we can directly start the Mahavyuha Sutta. So I would like to invite Venerable Buddha Rakhita to present the topic as well as his comments, please.
So again, this is a dialogue that's going on between the Buddha and a replica the Buddha made of himself. And so the purpose of this is so that he can ask subtle questions for the benefit of the devas who are listening. And we're beginning again from a question within this sutta that the replica Buddha is putting to the Buddha. The teachings that some say here is supreme. Others say that the same is inferior. Which assertion of theirs could be true when they all claim to be skilled? They say their own teaching is complete, but they say the other's teaching is inferior. Having quarreled thus, they go on disputing as they each say their own opinion is true. If one is inferior when disparaged by an opponent, no one would be distinguished among teachings, for they each say the other's teaching is inferior while firmly advocating their own. And their veneration of their own teaching is done just as they praise their own ways. All their assertions would be true, since for them purity is exclusively their own. For a Brahman, there is no being led by others, no selecting among teachings and grasping tightly. Therefore, he has overcome disputes, since he does not regard other teachings as supreme. So here we really come down to the crux of the matter, that we all seem to view our own teaching as superior and complete, and we view the teachings of others as inferior and incomplete. And this would sum up almost every single domain or discipline or conversation or argument or political debate or scientific debate throughout time. It's really comes down to this crux of how can we know anything. And, you know, firstly, you know, so the answer that the Buddha is giving is that for a Brahman, and in this case, when he says Brahman, he really means like an enlightened person, a genuine Brahman, there is no being led by others. So he's not looking to others in essence to lead himself. So his frame of reference is not external. And his reference is not external to other people, to other leaders, to other gurus, to other teachings. It's an internal reference. So this Brahman does not select amongst teaching and grasping to those teachings tightly. So again, you see here in his answer that it's this identification with self, identification with the guru, identification with the teachings. So this Brahman is not identifying in that sense. He's not selecting amongst these teachings and not grasping tightly to them. Therefore, he has overcome disputes, so he has nothing to argue about with the other, since he does not regard other teachings as supreme. Because it's not his frame of reference. It's not that there might be some validity to what somebody else is saying. It's just not his frame of reference. So he has his own insight. He has his own truth. He has his own stability. It's very internal. Whereas other people are always referencing off of, you know, teachings. They're off referencing off of, they're triangulating. They're trying to find some sort of stability through this frame of reference. So my teacher said this book says that, and they are therefore just blown around. Then they get into these arguments that this teaching is supreme and that the other's teaching is inferior, because they really don't know. They really have no genuine insight. So this is still going on to this very day. This is something extremely powerful. In fact, I would say as we become more interconnected through information, and this becomes the information age, then this teaching here by the Buddha, this subtle argument that he was making, has become even more important. We don't seem to be able to find common truth. Everybody has alternative facts, alternative arguments, alternative truth. So we can find it very hard these days to even have shared truth, shared reality. I maybe it's just my own projection that in this agrarian society, in the time of the Buddha, most people I think would have been coming from the same area, from the same culture. They would have been based in an agrarian society. In other words, it was kind of like farming, and they would have had a lot of common truths held. I mean, they would have had superstitions. On the other hand, like the mechanism of why certain things happened, they would have had a superstitious background maybe about it, or not science based. But on the other hand, they would have been very earthy, I would have imagined. This, kind of agricultural people, very earthy, linked to the cycle of life, the cycle of nature. Whereas these days, people are not linked to the earth, to nature, to the cycles of life. They can be very, very abstract or caught up in their ideas and thinking or imagination or fantasy. So finding a common ground, finding a common truth is impossible, because there's no frame of reference, no common anything. So to have this insight, even at that time, where in some ways I imagine, I mean, like, I don't know how true it is, that they had this common ground, this common way of looking at things. I mean, I just relate it back to my own experience growing up in a village in a farming community, that they all think the same to a great degree. They have quite a very strongly shared common view amongst themselves. But, to dismiss all of this and point inward, that the reason that teachings, we go around saying that my teaching is superior and the other's teaching is inferior, and that we quarrel about this, is because we don't know our own heart. For a Brahman, there is no being led by others. Why is the Brahman not led by others? Because he's led by his own internal frame of reference. He knows truth as it is. He doesn't need to be led. Not selecting amongst teachings and grasping tightly, because he knows truth as it really is. Therefore, he has overcome disputes. Especially the key dispute is the one within one's own heart, whatever about other beings, since he does not regard other teachings as supreme, because he knows truth as it is directly itself. So maybe you'd like to...
Which the stanza you are just specifically referring, or it's a comment?
From 903. It's called 903 here, and I have three different translations, and it's still all 903.
Yeah, yours, if you take Bhikkhu Bodhis, and it is very
different,
close.
Special, and superior.
Yeah, 903. Can you just read the direct translation, English?
It starts with the question from the replica Buddha, and he says, the teaching that some here say is supreme, others say that the same is inferior.
I am writing the Pali.
Yeah.
This thing, I mark it as 907. So four numbers difference. Yamahu dhammam paramanti eke, tameva hinanti panahu anye. Satchanu vado katamo imesang, sabbeva hime kusalava dana. Some monks and ascetics says this is the supreme. The others are inferior. What is your opinion? What is the truth? Are they all good? Or they are just all useless? So that is the question the imaginary Buddha is asking from Gautama the Buddha. And he says, Sakanghi dhammang paripunna mahu, anyasa dhammang panahina mahu. Some ascetic and Brahmins, he always says, mine is fulfilled, mine is complete. Others, they are all full of holes, others no end, they are quite open-ended. Evampi vigahya vadanti vivadayanti sakasakan sammuti mahu sajjam. This is the way they are adamant, they are stereotype and telling, I am true. I am the superior. I am this. But others, I find these loopholes and mistakes. They are taking their own view as the truth. When that happens, what else can happen? He don't think it is a view. He think it is as a truth. So that happened only to the Brahmins and the ascetics. The people working in the field and the working field in the lifting the weight, they don't have this question. They have to have the bread and butter. But those who are somewhat better off, like ascetics and the Brahmins, this is, I am fully complete. My theory is complete. Others have weaknesses. So they have enough room for the debate. That is because they are wrong view. Or they are view. The Buddha says wrong view. So that's a superior disease, not the common people disease. Common people have the bread and butter question. Diseases, but the people are those who have something to eat and some places to sleep and the clothing. They are fighting. So Buddha, is he seen on the common people's ground or from the Brahmin's grounds? You have to decide. So this is the theme of the whole sutta, whereby those who are meditating, those who are spiritual life, they are in asylum, in a mad place. So, the Buddha himself is telling. So, which mad person is good? Which asylum is good? Is what we have to decide. So, being meditators, what I thought was that the Buddha's reality need no any theory, no any formula. If any theory come, it will get corrupted and it is based on either eternalism or nihilism. That's why whenever you become very, very thorough with the Buddhism, you are unwashable. You become permanent damage. PhD, permanent head damage. You will get PhD. So the other hand, Nisanvane, we had a principle, you must not read, you must not by heart anything, just listen to the teacher. There should not have any library. But later we have the best library for the moment. But still, are we misled? Or are we fighting for this and that? Or we are going to accept this disease, accept this infestation of the theory and the view, so that are we to fight with others? I mean, we must discuss, we must have dialogue, we must have dynamic dialogue, but not to prove something, because the Buddha is already given. So there are two ways of argument, prasangika, sakavada. Prasangika means showing your mistakes, but I am not prescribing something. I'm telling you, this is not connected, this and this is no flow, and grammatically wrong. So I can prasangika, that means analytical. But instead I can say, no, take mine, I am the superior. Don't talk about me, talk about with me. This is what. So I am giving my view. So, Venerable Nagarjuna is the best person ever in the world about this dialogue or debate or how do you call it, logics. But he was only prasangika. He was explaining what is wrong with the Hindu presentation, what is wrong with the other animation and kind of, but he never presented something. So, he was failure. His disciples told, my teacher was just destructive. He was criticizing everything. And therefore, he was not given anything. So I also was much with the same sharpness in my mouth. Because many Sri Lankan monks, they are criticizing Hinduism, criticizing Muslim, but they are not giving something. They are not practicing. They are not going to Pindapada. They are not living exemplified life. Then I told, you are just destroying. And our monks also have the same mistake. They are not practicing. What is your regiment? Where is your camp? Where is your barrack? And I thought I am a winning. I mean, I have never gone to the confrontation, but I am shouting at home. But later, whenever I heard the prasangika method of analysis of Mulamadhyama Karika, one of the Sri Lankan professors, one monk told, Bande, you must read this book. This is the way the dialogue or the debate or relationship or arguing happen. There's two kinds, prasangika and sakavada. So as far as the Buddha is there, we have nothing to present. He has already given. So if you are wrong, I am just telling, hey darling, you are in problem, you are leading to a problem. I am telling, don't do it. So you can criticize me, he is just criticizing, he is not teaching me, he is not giving something. Then I say, please go to the Sutta Nipata, read it. So therefore, I can give that credit to the Buddha and just tell, as far as we have compassion, as far as we have sympathy or empathy, otherwise I'll be criticizing. That's why he told that all the agrarian societies are accepting the basic tenet. But within that, we have the intensified agriculture, Indo-agriculture, farming, all the kind of thing. But still, we are living on the earth. But when we are fighting, all the agrarian people, other people can't understand because they are down to earth, still they are fighting. I don't say it's a fight, I say it's a dialogue. So, Sutta Nipata book we selected for our discussion. So, therefore, we have to understand, we must have interaction, we must have confrontation. But not always with the negative fighting. So, Avalokvamsa used to say, as far as you have the compassion, even if you debate and defeat other person, you are not in danger. Otherwise, when you are defeating other person, he will get irritated and he will chasing you behind, he will stab you. But the Buddha had the natural death. That's a great thing, lived 80 years, 45 years exposed life. For 16 hours in people, 2 hours with gods. And still he maintained his solitude and he was going arguing and all that. He has a natural death. All the others, they have shaken the society. They have shaken the authority. So authority is merciless. Socrates, Jesus Christ, John F. Kennedy, Gandhi. So therefore, if you are to live with the people, you have to present that you are wrong. What are you telling me that? What do you are telling? Just please go and refer to the Sutta Nipata. Go to the Sutta Pitaka. Can you give me? No, I can't, because I am also doing the same. I am also still reading. I am not a complete person because I can't compare with Buddha. I have to accept it. So Sakavada, there is no my own profession, profess. I am telling, I am accepting it with that. I have associated with it. Yesterday that is what we did in Pavarana. What we did. Dittenava, Sutenava, Parisankayava, Vadantupang Ayasmanto, Anukampang Upadaya, Pasanto, Parikarishan. We have lived together 3 months. If you have seen any visual or eye or ear or suspicion, please tell me. I am inviting you. But no one is telling others mistakes because it is not that everyone is perfect. But we have mutual understanding. And that is the biggest, the most refined culture, Buddhist culture, according to Upanita side. Because no one is asking someone to please analyze me and cut and kind of thing. Because we have so much of arrogance. We also arrogant to a certain extent. But mutual understanding, living under the same roof, so that never this kind of question asked by human beings. That is why the imaginary Buddha is only can ask. We have so much of radio discussions. We have so much of television discussions, full of debates present day. Parliament is there and the people go into the gold face and shouting. What they are shouting? They are just sound pollution. Only sound pollution. They don't know, mind your own business. We have to not only mind your business, we are discussing each other. So therefore, the Buddha is negative about this kind of one-upmanship. And it is very common in Chula Vihua, as well as the Prasan Sutta, the Mahavihua. So we have to go further. That is what I mentioned. So when he was reading, what I thought was, Buddha's theory need no any books, no memory, no theory. It did not have any projection, no pin down. So Bhikkhu Bodhi told, science need no any evidence to the Buddhism. Buddhism can stand still without any support. But the science is a way we can communicate with others so scientific people can understand. It is nothing amazing. Because the Buddhism itself was this Tathagata situation, need no any, it is propped up. It is not supported by anything. It is called apatitita. Apatitita means it is not based upon something, a person, or sect, or a building, or any liberty statue, nothing. So that itself is everlasting. So therefore, whenever you feel the Dhamma is happening, you are no more, or myself is no more, but still you have your own share of experience. It's a distance observation, and you can see some others also can feel that whenever they are lost into self, and the Dhamma is happening, pervading. So for that, these two suttas are good, but find difficult to grasp the idea. Because always they think they should have a Buddhist affairs department in the government, and they should say, we have constitution number 9. It's a promise of the government to protect Buddhism. Without that, it would have been better. And in Kandy Perahara, they must take the deed where the English government gave. Even under the English government, this thing, they have rights to go into the procession in the street. And he take this thing. What does it says? And what does the official letter handing out the Siamanikaya Mahanayaka? That is what you give to whenever you become Mahanayaka. You know Mahanayaka? Siamanikaya chieftain. Whenever appointed, they give certificate like that. It's a one thing. It says, if you happen to know any coup in the government, in the country, against Buddhism and the government, if you are not declaring it, you will be killed. Recently published, Walpole Rahula published it. He says, this is giving you the rights. You are the chieftain. Have it? Yes. If you know people are in the coup, how do you call it? Kumantrana? How do you say? Struggle against the government or Buddhism? You know definitely. Knowing if you are not telling, will be shooted. One monk shot dead. Kudapala Samanera in Kandy. Because he was the chieftain. There was no Upasampada. He was he is appointed. But the coup happened. Rebelling against the British government. Killed. People revoluted. Same thing happened in Burma. King Vijaya. U Vijaya. he taken to the prison. He says, I must have my robe, I must have my precepts. So no robes, you have to take the, you know, the normal uniform. He starved to death 167 days. Then all world, whole country had the revolution against British government. So this is how it happens. So that is, if you get a post, if you give an organization, it's always satanic. If you are here now, I am free, I am me. Then all these theories, no, we need no any imaginary Buddha. We can just understand our own Buddha. And I have no special message. Because I am professing the same thing the Buddha says. But I can see if you are agreeing, I can tell you, hey, you are too tall, you are too white, get out. To my eyes, you are unwantedly height because it's a threat to me. And you are white. Coming color is no good. So I have to get rid of you. So I can tell you. Samudaya, they get your skin out and become shrinked. Then you can have the full pledge of membership. Otherwise, be careful. I have not asked you. This we can do it. So this is the way. That much of argument, I am happy. And telling that you can tell me, I can tell you, because we are all in the same boat. But that is not the sectarianism. It is little vicious. Always take organization. Always take a constitution. Always take a formulas. Detrimental. Have the formulas for the Pirivanai and learn people, but you mind your own business, be mindful and be unto yourself, here and now I am. This is little, I know it is very popular, but this is not the main argument, so I stop my mouth. Siddhamadro, too white. You have to be brown.
Just come back to, you know, it's an important point is that one of the true characteristics is anicca, anatta, and dukkha, and this uncertainty is extremely difficult to stay with, and so therefore people go into certainty. So there's, so when somebody says superior or inferior, what they're actually is they're just unwilling to be with uncertainty. They're unwilling to be with the absolute anicca, anatta, and dukkha of every moment and of existence itself. So therefore, they're always asserting superior or inferior. And they're always saying, I'm right and you're wrong. And it's this inability to be with, I have no idea, because everything is uncertain. Everything is impermanent. Everything is a process that's just arising and passing away. And we're fooled by our own ego. We're fooled by this conceit that I know what's happening and I know what's true, and when in fact we don't absolutely know, you know. And so therefore we think that we know, but we don't really know. And I find, you know, like in my own case, I can be very unwelcome by people who want certainty when I know in my heart there is no certainty. So if I talk about uncertainty in the world, people think, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This guy is just a fool. Whereas they want to hear certainty. They want to be told what's the way the world is, what the truth is. And if you say, well, it's uncertain, then they think, well, you must be crazy. You know, you must be a fool. And, you know, if you say that everything can be swept away in any moment, they think you're a fool, because for their life, it's very static. If I think about my farming community, family and so forth, every day is relentlessly the same in some ways, and they hate change. They don't want any change. They will defend, they will live a life that is so boring to make sure there's no change. And it's very, very difficult. It's very difficult to really stay with truth and the way the world is. So as a result, they, you know, have these theories and ideas that I'm right and you're wrong. But, you know, to really be with uncertainty, to be as stripped down as we are as monks, where we don't have the scaffolding, we don't have all of the creature comforts, we don't have all of the alio, the nest around us, where we're not nesting, we're not roosting, we're not accumulating things, we're not gathering titles or properties or family. It's an extraordinary vulnerability. And to be at complete peace with this, you know, nakedness, that we're born naked and we will die naked, and actually we pass through life in a naked way, is incredibly difficult. It's an extraordinary practice. So even though we have just a robe and a bowl and very few possessions, this is an incredible task. So you can understand why there are so few Brahmins. Everybody else are just telling themselves stories, I'm right and you're wrong.
So I am happy, before giving any comment from others, find a relationship between Jnanananda's concept and reality and the point we are discussing. Would you mind to read this? With page number 56. Where I have put the marks. And that start with Venerable Buddha Gosa. Second line?
The whole...
up to the two lines.
Can I read the verse as well?
Start a sentence with Venerable Buddha Gosa. The book is Concept and Reality by Venerable Jnanananda, and the page number 56. The reading is by Venerable Subhuti. Vibhuti.
Sudhir.
Very sorry. We call, I thought it's a Chinese, but later he found Canadian. And still I can't find this thing, but never mind.
Some people think I'm Asian. Many people
You're
think
from?
I'm Asian. For
some people say?
Many people think that I'm Asian.
And you speak Sinhala, so therefore you are making people confused.
Ultimately confused, yes. Sorry about that. But Awasare Mante, thank you for the teachings. I will now read the passage. Even Buddha Gosa seems to have been rather reluctant to appreciate fully the implications of this sutta, and we have a curious hint as to this in his comment on the word Nibbana, occurring as the last in the list of 24 concepts. While commenting, he hastens to add that Nibbana here refers only to the 5 heretical concepts of Nibbana. This narrowing down of the meaning is obviously incongruous with the spirit of the sutta.
Yes, please, good.
It, however, reflects a disparate attempt on the part of the commentarial tradition to salvage the orthodox concept of Nibbana so dear to our religious consciousness, that the emancipated sage, Muni, no longer clings even to such concepts as Nibbana or detachment, Viraga, is clearly indicated in the following verse of the Sutta Nipata.
This is Kate, one of the writers. He has written in Buddhist philosophy how much our commentaries are biased, and they want to establish Nibbana. It is not a concept, it is a place-like, it's a domain-like. So he is criticized as this person, Keith, has been repeated 3 times on the book. Today also we read page number 117, there also he read. When Jnanananda is referring, then I went to the first, this is the first occurrence. He says how much, whenever you are going to be a commentator, how much you get bogged down in a concept to establish Buddhism. And he is not well established in Buddhism. So he wanted to establish Buddhism. But the Western thinkers, they say his commentary is biased. It's establishing Nibbana. And his reference, and exactly the same, whenever someone is establishing a theory, a place, a concept, it is not impermanent. So therefore, impermanent people with the idea of impermanent, they keep things are open. Only prasangika is not sotantra, not presenting your idea, because he says, you are wrong. But I am not going to say this is a pillar, this is something to be anchored upon. No, there is no such. So then what is the Buddhism? how to remove the Buddhism from the Buddha Dhamma. So that good Mahavira Sutta. So that's why I just wanted to introduce this book also, because he so often take quotation from the Sutta Nipata and Majjhima Nikaya. So we are opening the discussion for others. You have anything?
Should I finish that verse? Just because he says.
Yeah.
So the English translation here is, for the Brahman, the Muni, who has transcended all bounds, there is nothing that is grasped by knowing or by seeing. He is neither attached to attachment, nor is he attached to detachment. In this world, he has grasped nothing as the highest.
What is the reference?
That's apparently verse 795.
Sutta?
Sutta Nipata. It doesn't say which one.
That means very late one. No,
700.
795. Okay. If anyone wish to add 795.
I thought, thank you, Swaminansa Bhante. Well, a couple of things, I guess, that I came up was that, you know, there are so many different religions in the world. There's so many different views. And but thinking about, because we're in Buddhism, that that there is... automatically people, you know, they want to stick to their way of doing things. So they, you know, if somebody is like a Christian, they would be very suspicious of Buddhist teachings, and probably many people would be put off by them but then we're all human beings as well. So we have to live, you know, by oxygen and drinking water and food, and so it's interesting that we can be so opposed to other people and their ways, and it also occurred to me that human beings have become so populated on the planet that we're becoming so close in contact with each other that it makes things more intense and more people can feel more, insecure, and because we're in such close contact, and if there's somebody that thinks differently than you, that often ends up being conflict, with governments as well. There's just we're all sort of competing now. I mean, at this point, it's gotten so the planet is becoming so populated by human beings that there's definitely much more competition involved, and superior. You know, one group wanting to be, you know, have their security in their place, and there are other people coming and invading them, and so it's the same old problems that were at the time of the Buddha, but now it's even more difficult. And you know, even within our own, like just in one monastery, you know, we're all studying, we're all following the path of the Buddha, but each person has grown up differently and has had different experiences as they grow up, so they have sort of a different worldview just based on the people that they have been conditioned by. As you know, as young people, as you grew up with whatever your experiences you had, so you know, the Buddha's teachings would be apply differently to each person because of their different needs. And so to argue about that wouldn't make sense, because, you know, each person, many people do need kind of a different way and a different way to take in the Buddha's teachings and to apply it to their life so that it brings benefit and brings them closer to realizing their true potential and their true understanding of reality. We have our own delusions and our own wrong views, so we need to one person doesn't need the same, you know, way of straightening their view as another person, because we just have different views of different problems. So those are just some of the thoughts I thought I would
in gist, in short.
I guess there were a couple of things. I was just more reflecting, Swaminath, about the fact. Okay, the one thing was that we all have the commonality of being human beings. Yet there's a inherent, we have a fear and suspicion of others because of different views and because of different religions and cultures conflicting and having different ways of viewing the world and wanting to keep their place of security. So I guess the gist of that is that I think human beings are driven by fear of wanting security. And there's a natural tendency for human beings, not for us particularly as Buddhists, but I think everybody has this sort of wanting to kind of stick to their, and this may be even more Western people, culture people, I think, have become more, much more individualized. So I think what I've understood is in Asia, people are much more like whole. They're not so divided amongst as individuals. In the West, we've gotten so much, we've prospered so much that each person can kind of create their own little bubble that's much more strong and narrow, and they can keep other people out. Whereas in Asia, it seems that people are more on a level field and more community-based and more family-based and whole as people. More close to being human.
Hooray, I am very happy.
Well, that's
so you have to tell directly, we're not going around beating around the bush. You have to tell Asian is good, brown is good, and white is bad. So why you are only hammering?
Well, I Swaminath, that's actually why I wanted to be here, is because...
Otherwise, I'll kick you out. I told you that you are too white.
I wanted to learn from brown men.
Yeah. So that yesterday evening also we had heated arguments, and all the kind of, but later we have a shake hand and no much of mercy killing or no martyrism. Another American.
Yeah, too many of us today, I guess.
Another one is Vijayapurayi. He's in Vijayapurayi. He doesn't know both of you.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Let me see. He came morning when we were about to go to Anuradhapura. He told, "Where are you going?" I told, "I am going on Pindapatha." So he put the full rope and ball. And then on the way back, I told, I wish to walk to the Kalaveva, just to see Kalaveva and go Anuradhapura. So when Sudhu Amro came to the Kalaveva, found the bun, and remove the robe and start walking. Water level is very low. Walk into the center, the island. And I thought the American guy come here in Sri Lanka. You know where the place we are going to have a bath in Kalarava? He just climbed down from there, from the Anikat, and walk. And then he was removed the, almost under the Andani and walk into the island. And Hemant and everyone came. I told, you see, who is that? I told the American. You see, Vante, how free. He's, and after sitting, having a nice sit, he go to the Pindabad and have a meal and come back. Of course, after seeing the this thing and a lot of, I mean, that swans and ducks and everything is there, very low level, I had no chance to have a bath. So we proceed to Anuradhapura. What a way. I told there's a naughty two Americans there. Who? And this is one of the naughty fellows, yes.
Vasarai Bhante, thank you, Mahasangha, for all the comments so far. And first of all, I just wanted to say that, you know, as we all know, Pavarana was last night and or yesterday. And that tradition alone, the tradition of asking your fellow monks and the Sangha for constructive criticism over your conduct or behavior, or, you know, if you see something or you think something or you believe that this other person could improve on something, you know, the other person is asking, like, my fellow monks, would you please tell me, you know, if I need to improve on something? And I think right there, one of the beautiful things about that is that you're saying that you're not always right, you know? So when you ask for a constructive criticism, you're saying that you're acknowledging that I'm not always right, and that sometimes I need somebody to point out my faults to me, which is not something that a lot of people in the world are willing to more or less acknowledge nowadays. Is that they can be wrong sometimes. You know, I think a lot of people would just like to believe that they're right all the time. And that's one of the things that leads to these conflicts that we see, these debates, these arguments, fighting, wars, killing, all that stuff, is the fact that a lot of people have this belief that I am right and you are not right. Point blank, period. I'm right, you're not right. So the act of inviting constructive criticism from your fellow monks is actually... I think a beautiful act of humility is saying I'm not always right. I'm acknowledging that I'm not always right, and I would like, you know, you to, or my fellow monks, to point out if I did something wrong. You know, I would like to know about it, so that way I can improve in the future. And so I wanted to point out that was really, really nice that Pavarana was yesterday, and I really like that tradition. Secondly, as you were mentioning, Bhante, earlier, you know, people are afraid, I guess, as you were saying, of the unknown. So they kind of believe, you know, my viewpoint is right and everyone else is wrong, because they're afraid of the unknown and they don't understand anicca, dukkha, anatta. And also, another thing that a lot of people do nowadays is they'll have this belief, or they'll say that if I'm not right and you're not wrong, then we're all right. All of us are right. So the belief behind it is still the same. So long as my personality is protected, as long as this personality view that I've constructed for myself is protected, that's all that matters. So if I'm not absolutely right and you're not absolutely wrong, well, then all of us are right. We're all equal in this. And, you know, that's okay, because, you know, my personality is still protected. This personality that I've constructed is still protected. A lot of times people, you know, will say that, you know, if they don't... If it's not a thing of where I'm absolutely right and you're absolutely wrong, then it's at least a thing of we're all equal and all of us are right. And that's another example of people not or being afraid of, you could say, the unknown, of not understanding anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering, or unsatisfactoriness and not self. And so that is another comment that I wanted to point out. That is my comment.
I thought that in love, in sex, all the disputes are there, but no harm. As far as your purpose is fulfilled. So no warfares, no argument, love making and chocolates and dark chocolate or something like that. Do it's also happening. I mean, we monks can see the politicians are fighting and warfares and they are on the views. But in the, therefore, no limits for sex, no limit for the war. I found no limits for vipassana. Vipassana is such a thing, wherever you go with the ball and the rope and live. I mean, others are additional. So therefore, it is, if you understand vipassana, you are in Nibbana. Our fight is to understand vipassana. We can fight, no harm, but there's no martyrism. How do you call martyrism? Martyrism?
Martyrdom.
Martyrdom. So we can fight. And but the Buddha has given the team. We have not achieved it. In that we are impermanent, I thought incomplete. So we are sharing. But still you are white, still you are white. As the philosopher and his son got together, Matthew Ricard, he says his father and he is arguing, and no one changed. The big book, the son and the philosopher. No harm, we are not convincing someone, we are not converting someone. There's no such idea because I am also a learner. So that way, yesterday Pavarani is who Pandita said to say, there is no such a culture. We are offering to you, you are Samanera. Still you can find fault with me and you can express yourself. You are not perfect. You have to tell according to the sutta. That particular constitution or just particular rule, you can't project. You are not in a... How do you call prejudices? If you are prejudiced, others will fight with you. So without a prejudice, you have to tell that particular rule, number 17, expressed like that, Bante, you committed it, you are wrong. You have to surrender. If you are telling about your idea that I am coming from the Baptist family and our family is such and you are doing this and that, everyone will hack you. So that is the way. Good.
And... really quickly, I wanted to say one other thing about what Bhante here was saying about, you know, Westerners being more individualistic nowadays. I would say that the way I would explain it is there is definitely some truth to that, I would say. I would say that our culture has become definitely more self-centered, you could say, in many regards, where... it's more than ever before. This is a personal attack on me. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. And, I would say that our culture has become definitely more self-centered, where everything has become, you could say, offensive. And people just don't know how to have even so much as dialogue anymore. A lot of the time, there's no such thing almost as in many Western countries nowadays. It feels like there's almost no such thing as this person has a different viewpoint than me. It's my viewpoint is right, always right. And if you're presenting something different from what I believe, then you're canceled, essentially, like canceled.
So regarding that, I have a different opinion. I went to New Zealand and that day Dalai Lama, His Holiness Dalai Lama came, organized by one of my friends. I have never seen him. So I went to the discussion in the big hall, 13,000 people or something like that. He came as a simple person. He told, there won't be wars because so much of dialogues are there. Over the table, people are discussing. So therefore, there are, before going to the violent, virulent fighting, there may be some negotiation because of the technology. Because of the traveling they have developed with the new science and kind of thing. Therefore, you can stop the war at the family level. Family level. Within the family, if the people are, if the mother is really shock absorber, he announced alarm the mother. Now every hate is going to the mother. Mother is having so much of tension. Family wait, but still, please be religious, please be mindful. And you can say within the family, if the within the family, children are really into the family, not the scattered. And therefore, there won't be. But still, when you see the Ukraine war, they are still with the primitive tools, fighting. But one day it will split and go to the nuclear, and that will be the end. So the person, Sadhguru and others, they say, why these are dragging? Dragging because dialogues are happening. Compromises are happening. It's good. We are not aware what is happening. So therefore, we see only the outlook. And there we can say one day this country is dinning, other country is there, and the China and this thing, everything is happening. That may be due to the technologically they are discussing, even though they are fighting, appear like enemies, they have round table discussions than the earlier brutal wars. Now wars are happening from drones, no people.
And online.
Oh, yeah. Wars are happening. Hacking. Hacking and looting so much of money, and whatever the secret you find in the science, no more a secret.
What I meant by it was like going online.
He says that histogram. Yeah, correct?
Social media.
Histogram?
Instagram. It's a picture.
Yeah. Pictures and naughty the comments and kind of. So, therefore, nothing hiding. The female, once they become puberty, they give photos, say, am I beautiful? Why not? All the crazy fellows telling you are beautiful, then he leave the family, go to media, and too big, too small, everything is beautiful. Sex. So war is there at one end. This way, just like dogs, just like pigs. Once the dog, the bitch become at end, there is no ethics. There is no waiting. The first ever the menstruation and then pregnant. This is what happened. So anyway, we are talking far away from Chulavi Mahavihua Sutta.
Yeah, with respect to Most Venerable Sir, thank you very much for the delightful insight. In Sinhala discussion as well as in this discussion. Since we are far away from the topic, I just want to come back to the topic. And we are talking about superiority and inferiority. Although in this discourse, Buddha is mentioning to the other Buddha that the same people who are going in search of truth are quarreling themselves. Buddha himself has mentioned that he is the superior in many instances. And in the first discourse itself, he said, I'm going to disclose a teaching that no one has heard ever before, and that it itself is showing his superiority. And in many other suttas, he has said, I am the chief in the above the three worlds, with all devas, brahmas, and human beings and yakkas. And I think that is, although he says that we should not quarrel on that, he has the capability and the skill to say that he is superior, because he has developed his mind, as Bhante said earlier. He is not taking anything as self. He has realized the impermanence, so he has the capability to avoid any confusion or any conflict that may arise from
from disclosing that he is the superior. So although he is saying that we should not go into the discussion of superiority and inferiority, he himself has done it with the necessary ammunitions to protect the world and himself and anyone who is following his path.
Thank you, Sanahanse, for the comments, and Mahasangha, everyone. Yes, I suppose I just have a open-ended question for the Theras especially, and for anyone who might have some insights. Essentially, it does seem like what the Suttanipata brings out to me a lot is the inherent problem of samsara, basically like where we get stuck and what kind of keeps us trapped. And because we don't really usually go over many other topics besides the Suttanipata, which is important because we do need to be aware of the problem, I'm just curious what can be said about having to overcome this problem. How do we see
So what I thought was, as far as you comment, you started this, whether we are technologically high or low, we are civilized or not, we are in the village or we are in the individual, we appreciate the family life or not, question is the question. Question answer is in here and now I am. We are searching in the wrong place. So our discussion must understand to gear it to make the point by the discussion, do we feel happy and confident wherever I am here? I am in no problem. I am not making a problem. I am not discussing with others. By no discussion, you give a silent sermon. And if you touched it, if you just had the pinch of the here now I am, it's a birthright. It is not given by the parents or the religion or any subject or any theory. But the thing is, someone has to stir it. Someone has to catalyze it. You are enlightened. So we are with no education, we become so inferior. We think the government is power, I have no power. Money is power, I don't have power. They have wife, I don't have a wife. They have children, I don't have a life. So that what all these things, all are institutional the crushing you. Buddha gave full-fledged. Come here and now you are fulfilled. You are contented. And when we go to Satipasala, we just tell children, you are the best. Don't worry about the parents' role model and the teacher's role model and the Supreme Court judge role model. They are utter shit. You are the best. They don't know how to express it. The Buddha says children below 6, they are pure in their mind, but they can't entertain it because they don't know they are pure. So we have to talk with our senior citizens' dilemma and says, you are so beautiful. Why don't you sing a song? And they never expect that kind of, they will think, they will ask the mathematical questions, historical question. No, no, no. You just start. And then we become young. We become beginners. And our theory, of course, we know. We can just let it aside. And then, you see, rejuvenation. And this is telomere. When you are meditating, there's a kind of a telomerase enzyme happens. So our chromosomes, caps, will be elongated, not shrink. And then day by day, they become young. Oh, this theoretical maximum you can explain how the meditation is verifiable. So when you are meditating, do we need that experiment? Do we need that kind of research? That means we don't have faith, even though we are monks. But we are using this tool as a tool for the scientific mind. Yes, this is, if you wish, these are the structural changes, not on the brain level, even at the cell level, even at the chromosome level. I mean, they are research never aimed at Nibbana. We are taking, people are happy with the rejuvenation. People are happy with the becoming a beginner's mind. They think there is a theory. Yes, there is a theory. But what theory? Telomerase never happened by theory. You just simply sit. I am free, I am me. here now I am. For that, do we need this kind of long discussions? Mahavihu have, Chulavihu have. So Vinod Jnananda gave 33 talks here in this building. And it has come as a library copy in English and Sinhala. Very simple person asked, is Nibbana so long? Then I told, I was so informed how to extract and these books and make me talkative, articulating. Otherwise, I felt it even as a young guy. But I don't know how to talk with Sudhu Hamduru and big shots and kind of thing. Now with these all borrowed terms, I can talk. And I feel like sometimes some people know I am a bumpkin. Some people think, oh, he knows everything and kind of. What nonsense. They are hobbies. I am reading. Because I can talk with you, I am very happy. But it is everything. I am to be a beginner's mind. So I always ask, to be a beginner's mind, do we need the long discourse? Do we need matrix education for the arithmetic? So I was very bad in arithmetic. My father's elder brother is a very drunkard person. He never have a bath. He just live in the life. And I told Lopa Paji, I can't go to school. Because so much of, they are told the Dirga Bidhimana Magadgani, I don't know in English terms. Long division. All the Putha, don't worry. Only four. You have to understand the extract, subtract, add, multiply and divide. That's all. Only four. All the things is balance. Then I went to postgraduate. And they taught econometrics with the matrix. At that time computers were not there. That day exam was there. I was not aware. I was at home, little sick. All the students came, why didn't you come back to the exam? Then I told, even I go, I fail. I need no any kind of postgraduate. But I went and asked the teacher. He's a very drunkard person. He said, okay, I give the same question paper. Other two students fail, I am passed. I got 33 marks in matrix. The econometrics.
You said you passed?
Yes, I got pass marks.
33?
Yes.
Yeah, those days, yes.
33, even a big number. Others fail. Even they can't, because it was such a difficult, I mean, econometrics. So I became Pakir. Because that my teacher is a drunkard person. This is the way. So I can teach econometrics, but I know nothing. But if I can take a book, I can teach this. Mahavihu Sutta, Chulavedi, it's all nonsense. Even without that, you can be mindful. Why don't you become mindful? Throw away the econometrics, throw away these books. And even Vindaman Jnananda was criticized. Because he is given so in detail. You see, without detail, you can't go into this subject. That's why the imaginary Buddha happened. And he's asked, you see, so long. So you have to go a slide, very little. And each and every concept is a topic for the bestseller. Topic for the Nobel Prize. You read the bestseller books. Exactly the same. They have handled only one verse. They know how to write prolifically. Never ever practice. They never practice. They think, present them as their own ideas. So he recommended this book, Kahneman's book, the Why Good People Arguing on the Politics and Ethics. Book name is different. What's the name? Book's name? You can't remember.
The Righteous Man.
Huh?
The Righteous Man.
Yes. Yes. So I hate that book.
Jonathan Haidt.
Yeah, not Jonathan.
Yeah, it is. It's a different author. Jonathan Haidt.
And after reading this one, he's talking why good people are arguing. Immediately Buddha is asking. Then I got the book, start reading again. And he present in a big number of vocabulary, good terms. But it's exactly the same. I never raised this question. I never thought about that's a relevant question. But the Buddha thinks that is the most relevant question. That's why the imaginary Buddha asked him. That Jonathan also writing the same. He was pressing and pressing and pressing. Bhante, you have all the books, why don't you take? But at the beginning, it was so boring. Sorry that I am taking again the discussion into the wilderness.
Thank you.
You had to talk to the mic.
Yes. To the mic. Yes.
Give Bhante the mic like this.
Bhante said that when we are being mindful and the difference between those who are going for Nibbana and those who are doing something for some algorithm and things like that.
Make mindfulness.
Then Bhante mentioned because they don't have faith. And so I wonder what Bhante really meant by what role faith has to play.
They don't have the faith on liberation. So they utterly they are misled. They will be going split and the mind will be really devastating. If you are doing mindfulness and if it is not geared to Nibbana, early part no problem. You are learning at a rate. But later question happen. Are you ready to leave your ego? Are you ready to leave your permanent notion? No. Then meditation is asking for trouble. That is why it says it's a business Buddhism, McDonald Buddhism, dollar boost Buddhism. So they are asking, they are criticizing me. Are you also a dollar businessman or McDonald mindfulness? Then I told, I am giving just bare attention. As you like, you can carry on. I am not dealing with your faith. The last time we had the administrators, health administrators seminar. I gave 30 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes. One person from England told, I am also in the health sector and administration. One thing, your mindfulness is a faith-based or religious. Have you adjusted the mindfulness? Yes, I told, I adjusted. I am talking about the bare attention. I am not the founder. Venerable Jnanaponika founded 60 years ago. I picked it. I present it. You can read The Power of Mindfulness. And I found that is an easy way because it can be a school subject. Whatever the faith. But I am a religious, I am a 33 years vassa. I am a forest monk. I am dedicated my life, but I am asking others, please come to Nibbana, come to Buddhism. No. Just catalyze your mindfulness and paths are open. It becomes diversified. So then you have to advert, you have to avenue the mind that I am not responsible. By opening the issues, opening the diversification, is it a crime? I don't think so.
Yeah, so the thing about Vipassana and about insight meditation is that it's so simple to some degree that nobody will believe it. And so there's all these other posh theories.
2 minutes more.
Yeah, I'm aware.
No, I am not disturbing.
No. So a lot of the reasons that we have to understand some of these arguments or ideas is to actually just keep batting away all of these distractions. So and have confidence in the practice, because no matter what, it's just the nature of the human mind that if somebody has something more complicated or pretty or a theory, we're attracted to it. And you have to be able to kind of like go, yep, okay, bat it off. Another story, another argument. And at the same time, appreciate the profundity that in fact, mindfulness and insight is unlocking wisdom, you know. And we all these intellectual ideas, and we could go into a form of philosophy department, but there's no wisdom department. And
you can start.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, we're...
Sorry,
it's sort of like a via negative. You have to keep on dismissing all these other arguments, whittling it away, whittling it back to this very, very simple set of truths, like that it is anicca anatta dukkha, and that it's just be mindful and it's just stay with things. You can't believe it. You know, it can't be that simple. It can't be just here and now. It can't be just
You are talking
moment.
About the faith.
You know, there's faith, but then it has to be confirmed faith. Until you have confirmed faith, verifiable, and you get your own direct experience, it's all just theories. And you're just fall off every time into the different theories. And I see so many monks who, you know, they join and they get some sense of peace and calm, and then the next thing they're off into some philosophy, or they're off learning Pali, they're off learning the thing, you know, something. They're doing anything but here now I am. That's all. You know, so
enough.
This is a kind of defense.
I have a criticism. You are joining the mindfulness and insight now. So that's my formula. When I go and talk in the Perth, they are not happy. I don't mindfulness, which insight? So he started with that. No, mindfulness is something very preliminary and inside. So next time you can proceed. Sorry, I disturbed three times. I am a superior person. I have my rights. I am the discussion. So therefore, I have to make everything laugh. So that's the end of today's discussion. Thank you very much for the active participation.